Well, hello. So, just like Steve said, my name is Emmanuel Sotka. I'm the youth director here at Grace Church. I work in the tech booth some Sundays in the back, so if you're like, I've never seen you before, it's because I hide, so no one can find me. Today I've been asked to kick off a series that we're doing on 1 Peter. And so before I do that, I wanted to share just a little bit about myself, because it's always good to know about the person who's communicating with you. Like if you met a person and they just started talking to you and then they didn't give you their name and then you didn't really learn anything about them and then they left, you'd be like, who was that guy? And you probably wouldn't think about what he said. You'd be like, I'm going to forget it forever. So a little bit about me is that I'm a history teacher for middle school and high school kids. So my days are spent just in terror all the time. But no, they're fine. They're fun. But so I'm a history teacher for those kids. I'm also like on summer vacation right now, so that's been very fun. I can stay up as late as I want for the first time in like 10 months, so that's super exciting. I was homeschooled through the eighth grade, so if you're like, that guy's awkward, I know. Okay, it's fine. And then at the same time, I went to high school here with Steve, so I knew him before all the character development when he was an awkward 11th grader. I could tell you stories, but I'll be nice. And at the same time, then I went off to school to become a teacher because making money sounded stupid. I was like, I just want to watch everyone else make money. That'll be great. And then on top of that, I've been doing youth ministry since I was 18, and that's almost 10 years now. You're like, you look 37. Yeah, I know. It's fine. Okay. When I worked at a hospital for a year, and I wasn't allowed to tell those kids my age, so I would make them guess and then just never tell them. And they would always start really high. And they'd be like, 40? I was like, oh, no. And the last thing that I think sticks with me that I was told once was when I was student teaching, my sponsor teacher looked at me one day and she was like, you know, you're a really, like, entertaining teacher. I was like, that's cool. And she went, but you really don't know how to do, like, paperwork or any of those things. And I was like, oh, no. So what she basically just said is, you're a really interesting guy, but you don't know what day it is. Also true. My mom's laughing. She's like, no, you don't know what day it is, ever. So that's a little bit about me. And the reason why that matters is we're going to be talking about the book of 1 Peter. And, like, well, it's like the book of 1 Peter, so maybe it's about a guy named Peter, maybe it was written by a guy named Peter, it was written by a guy named Peter. And then the question is, yeah, but, like, why should we have to care what Peter has to say? Who's Peter? Because just in the same way as if I just, like, came up here and I didn't tell you anything about myself and then I ran away again, you'd be like, I don't know if I should believe that guy. If you read a book or a letter and you go, well, I don't know who this person is, it would become a question of, can I trust what this guy's saying? Why is he saying the things that he's saying? Right, and as like a history teacher and historian, because I like to be, I'm a historian, I might teach history, but like at my core, I like to study things and read and write papers and be boring. That's my thing. And so as a historian, I want to care about who writes the stuff because I have to research it. The professors make me, right? But a person's life informs everything they do. So if you're a writer and you write something, what has happened to you in your life, what you personally believe, and all of those experiences work together, and they kind of show up on a page, and then they whatever is in there is in there. And you cannot separate yourself ever from the life you've lived from the things you say. And so it's really important that we care about the author, and it's really important, therefore, that we know, like, who is this Peter guy? And, like, in school, I have to do this all the time. My professors will be like, if you're going to read a source, you have to do research on the guy who wrote it. You have to figure out everything about his life, and it's... So I got to do that for you today. Steve was like, you want to preach? And I was like, sure. He's like, you're going to do exactly what you do when you're in school. And I was like, oh, no. But it's fine. It means I'm at least supposed to be good at it. So who is Peter? That's the question. And it's an important question. And so, like, who is he? Was he homeschooled? Is he a history teacher? Did he slip on a piece of paper in front of all his friends when he was 15? No, that one's me, right? And I still remember that because paper's dangerous. Stay away from paper, okay, first off. But if I'm going to believe what Peter says, I want to know if I can trust him. So we're going to have to try to figure out who he is. And so we start with a source. That's the history teacher in me coming out. That's gross. Right? We got to start with the source. And it's like, what is it? It's a letter. We said that already. So Peter is writing a letter, which is like the best technology he had because he lived 2,000 years ago, and that was it. So he takes out some paper, and he takes his little quill, and he's like, all right, I got to write all my thoughts down. And so, okay, he's writing a letter. And like, but who does he say he is? Because in a letter, you all normally are like, you write to who you're writing to. That's like letter etiquette or email etiquette. Where you have to be like, to whom it may concern, and then you like go through your thing, and you feel really weird because you're being super robotic for no reason. Peter has to do that too. And so in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 1, Peter starts the letter by saying, this letter is from Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ. And it's like, well, that's a whole lot to unpack there, because what does any of it mean? So we know that his name is Peter. And if you've like been in the Bible before, that might like spark up some memories for you. You're like, oh, the Peter from like the guy who cut off a guy's ear, the guy who was a fisherman. Are those the same guy? Yeah, they're the same guy, right? But that doesn't really explain much, because you still don't know about like who. You might have known what he did, but like who is he? You still don't really quite know. And then on top of that, he's writing letters. And so, okay, and then he's an apostle of Jesus Christ. And what does that mean? And the people who he's writing to would know, because that's the fun thing about letters, is they're always addressed to people who are in the moment, and so they get what's happening. And then they don't know that 2,000 years later, we're going to look at it and be like, I wasn't there, I don't know what's going on. So we have to dig in a little bit, and Peter identifies himself as an apostle, and the word apostle refers to someone who was specifically chosen by Jesus to preach the word of God after Jesus had died and rose from the dead. So Peter's kind of a big deal, because Jesus chose him for something. And that also means that Peter would have met Jesus. Peter would have talked to Jesus. So Peter has some clout in the Christian world, and he's not afraid to mention, he's like, I'm an apostle, okay? So it's like a professor who's like, I'm a doctor, thank you very much. Peter's like, I'm an apostle. And on top of that, we know that he's just going to, that means they knew each other. That's the important bit, that Peter and Jesus would have met and talked and knew each other. And that means that when Peter talks about things, you can know, well, here's the perspective of a guy who spent a really long time with Jesus. So he's got a little bit more credibility there. And if we continue, it's like, okay, so who's he writing it to? Because you don't just write letters to yourself. Then it's a diary, and you don't call it a letter, because you're like, no, this is my diary. I'm writing to myself here. But so Peter's writing to people, and it says in the rest of verse 1, it continues, and Peter says, I am writing to God's chosen people who are living as foreigners in the provinces of Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, which is a fun word to say, Bithynia. And that's a really large area. I looked it up. There's a map. And because I'm a history teacher, I love maps. And you can see it over there. Those are the places. That's all of modern-day Turkey. If you're like, I don't know what any of those words mean. They don't exist anymore. None of those titles are around. But he's writing to like this province of Asia, which is in Turkey, not part of actual Asia. Welcome to the Romans. They're weird. And Cappadocia, and you can see Bithynia and Pontus, and like all those places. It's a whole country of modern-day Turkey. And so it's like he's writing one letter to like six different places, five different places. And in my head, I was like, does that mean that there's one dude who has like a letter, and he's got to run to everywhere and then read it and then run to the next place? Or are there five letters? Did they copy them down and send five guys? I got really bogged down on that for a while. We're not going to spend any time on it, but I spent a really long time thinking about it. And like provinces are just like states. Like a province in the ancient time is just like a state that we would think of today. Lots of other countries use provinces. America's special, so we call them states. But like it's the same geographical thing. It's just here's a group of people who live in a region, and we're going to name that region for organizational purposes. And that's it, right? And Peter refers to these people, right, as foreigners. And by that, he's talking about the Christians. We spent a whole series talking about how Christians are, like, representatives and foreigners living in, like, foreign territory. So they're citizens of heaven living in those other places. That's what Christians are. And that's how Peter identifies them. He says, hey, you're Christians, and you're citizens of heaven, and that's important to him. So he mentions that. And so then it becomes, all right, so we know what he's writing. It's a letter. We know where he's writing it to. It's to Turkey. And then we still have to answer the question, well, like, who on earth was Peter? And we have that one phrase, an apostle of Jesus Christ. And so, again, we know that Peter knew Jesus. And that also means that if Peter knew Jesus, he's going to be hanging around with Jesus. And where do we learn about Jesus? It's in the Gospels. And so Peter actually shows up in all four Gospel accounts because he's a pretty essential character. So if you open up the New Testament, you turn to the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Peter's in there. Peter's in the book of Acts, which talks about the growth and spread of the church after Jesus' death and resurrection. So Peter's in there. And then the apostle Paul, who writes a bunch of letters too that make up most of the New Testament, mentions Peter in the book of Galatians. So he's like all over the place. He's kind of an important guy. And with all that in mind, that would mean that, well, we have a place to go to look at the journey of Peter. And so we're going to start at the beginning. And the first thing you can learn about Peter because of his origin and where he comes from is that he's a normal guy chosen by Jesus. And so we have to look at the Gospels. We can jump in there immediately. And so what we know about Peter is that Peter has no clue in his life what's about to happen. Because Peter's just a guy, and he's just doing everyday guy things. And he doesn't know that Jesus, is going to come find him. He doesn't know that Jesus has a plan for him. And he doesn't know what his life is about to completely change because this random dude just walks up and like says hi to him. And so in Matthew chapter 4, verse 18, it says, one day, as Jesus was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, which is in the Jerusalem, Palestine area, he saw two brothers, Simon, also called Peter, and Andrew, who we don't care about apparently, throwing a net into the water, for they fished for a living. So I think Jesus went to that exact spot because he knew Peter was going to be there, and he knew Andrew was going to be there, and he calls them both, and it's fishermen, which is fishermen are odd because they played a really big part in the economy because people needed to eat, and if you lived 2,000 years ago, your options were really limited. You're eating meat and fish and grains. You eat a lot of cereal and then fruit, as that's all they got. So if you have any allergies, you're probably not going to live very long. But they're really important, but you're also only a fisherman because you can't get a better job. So everyone relies on you, but you're a fisherman because you flunked out of school, basically. In the Jewish culture, you have to memorize the Bible. You're supposed to memorize the first five books. It's called the Torah. And if you're really good at memorizing things, they keep promoting you through this educational structure, and eventually you become a scribe or a Pharisee, someone who's supposed to know a lot about the Old Testament and be proficient in Jewish law. But if you're a fisherman, it means you couldn't do that. And so they were go do what your family business is. And for Peter, that's fishing. And fishermen are gross. Can I say that? I don't know. Hopefully there's no fishermen. But you have to hang around fish, and fish smell. And then you have to kill the fish so that you can sell them and eat them. And then dead fish smell worse. And then on top of that, you just flunked out of school. So now you're a flunky, right, maybe? And then you have to fish for forever, and it smells gross. And I just don't think your life's going to be... I would not survive. I was not made for that world. Okay? But that's the world that Peter's in. And he and Jesus are going to meet. And Jesus knows all of that about Peter. He knows he's just a fisherman who does gross things for a living, and he still goes out to the Sea of Galilee and goes, I would like you, the normal guy, the gross fisherman dude. Jesus goes out there, and he calls Peter out. It says in Matthew chapter 4, verse 19, Jesus says to him and to Andrew, but he says, come follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people. And so what that tells us is that Jesus does not need Peter to be a fully formed human being in order to call him out. Because Peter doesn't know how to do any of those things. He's a fisherman. Does he know how to fish for people? I don't know. He knows how to fish for fish. Does he even know what Jesus means when he says that? I don't think so, because I certainly wouldn't. When I read that first time as a young person, I was like, I don't get it. Metaphors are hard, right? But Jesus doesn't care. He calls him out anyway. And all that Peter does is listen and move. He hears Jesus be like, yeah, come follow me. And Peter's like, sure, I'll leave my whole life behind. Which is kind of a questionable decision, but it works out. But I think it's kind of one of those things where we give Peter a little bit too much credit, where he's like, yeah, I'll follow Jesus. We're like, of course you follow Jesus. It's Jesus. But all Peter knows is there's this dude who called me away from my job and told me to follow him, which means I have to no longer be your fisherman, and I just get to travel around. Which, if I just quit my job and went traveling around the United States, I think a lot of people would be a little concerned. They'd be like, where is he going? He just left. So I think we have to live in that a little bit. It's like Peter doesn't know anything that's about to happen. Some of us who've read the Bible know the story. So we're like, yeah, you go, Peter. You're going to do cool things. And Peter has no clue. And so God probably won't ask you to leave your job. Maybe he will. But what's important is that all God needs you to do is being willing to answer when he calls. That's it. That's all Peter does. Jesus calls him out and Peter goes, yeah, I'll do it. And that's it. Peter doesn't know any of the terrifying unknowns that are about to happen to him, and neither would we. We don't get to look into the future and see God's plan all played out in front of us and then go through it a little checklist, oh, I remember this, I get to do it now, and then you go through it. You're not necessarily going to know what Jesus is going to ask you to do. But what Jesus tells Peter is that I will show you how to fish for people, which means Jesus knows he's going to equip Peter for the task. Peter doesn't need to know. Jesus is going to show him how. And so Peter's just a normal guy whose entire life was changed by an encounter with Jesus. And if we fast forward a little bit, we find out that that normal part of the normal guy shows up a lot. A lot. It's all over when you read about all the stuff that Peter does, you're like, that makes sense. He's just a fisherman. And sometimes, again, we don't want to make sure we don't get him too much credit, because Peter's this guy that doesn't always get it. He gets the big picture stuff. He gets it, right? He's there on the big picture things. But all that little stuff in the middle, he gets confused a lot. And I think about Peter when I was writing this. I was like, he's like the kid in the class who confidently gives an answer that's completely wrong. And the teacher's like, oh, I'm sorry, that's not correct. I taught middle school math for a year. Don't ask me why. I will not answer. No, I'm not going to tell you. But I had to teach 1 year of middle school math. And You know, you would like get up multiplication problems or whatever because middle schoolers, sixth graders are still learning the multiplication table sometimes. And you're like, what's 5 times 10? And the kid's like, it's 60. And I regret to inform you that the answer is not 60. And so as a teacher, you're like, how do I answer this gracefully? And the answer is, if you're me, you don't. I'm just kind of weird and mean about it. I'm like, no, I'm sorry, that's not correct. Try again. Which as a student, maybe is not the nicest, but sometimes it's like, I don't know what else to say. The answer is wrong. I'm sorry. But Peter has those moments. He's confused by a lot of things. And so if we turn to Matthew chapter 15, when Jesus is like, it's the story where Jesus is debating a bunch of these powerful people. There's like a crowd, so everyone's watching, which I think is kind of cool. Like you get to go debate and there's a crowd around you, and that's like Jesus' life. He's just like having a conversation with really important people and everyone gets to watch in the area. Like, we don't do that. That sounds cool. Terrifying, maybe. Like, I wouldn't want to do it, but I would like to be there and watch. But there's this crowd, and in Matthew 15, verses 10 through 11, Jesus is talking to the crowd, and he calls them in close. He says, here, listen. And he said, and try to understand. So he knows what he's about to say is a little bit difficult. He says, listen and try to understand. It's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. You are defiled by the words that come out of your mouth. I could like talk about that for a while. But we're going to move on just a little bit later in verse 15. Peter says to Jesus, he's like, hey, can you explain to us the parable that says the people aren't defiled by what they eat? And it's like, I think it's like I went to, you know, Christian high school. I've been going to church a long time. So sometimes in my head, I'm like, isn't that one obvious? But then I'm like, I'm being pretentious, aren't I? Like maybe Peter grew up in a culture where like what you ate really was important. They cared about that. The Jewish law is very, very particular about what you're allowed to eat, when you're allowed to eat, certain things like that, what's clean for you to do, what's unclean for you to do. He grows up in a culture that is really like conscious about all of those things. So for him to ask makes way more sense if you like pull yourself out of it a little bit and be like, yeah, he might have just been confused because suddenly he's being introduced to a whole new world view, and that would be a little bit confusing. But at the same time, it's also kind of not hard to misinterpret. So I go back and forth. Like, is he being silly or is it his culture? I don't necessarily have a good answer. But either way, Peter's a little stuck. And he's not afraid to ask Jesus for clarification, which I think is a cool lesson. Like, Jesus answers him. Jesus just tells him. He's like, this is what it means. He walks him through it. And that shows us that it's okay to ask God questions. God wasn't mad about it. Peter goes to him and he's like, yeah, I'm confused. And Jesus is like, all right, well, let's explain it. And sometimes Jesus' answers can be kind of sassy. At least I read them as sassy. When I taught Bible last year for 7th and 8th grade, because I work at a Christian school, and they were constantly surprised by how sassy Jesus was, because I would point it out and be like, that's kind of a weird, like, that could be mean if you thought about it in the wrong context. We're like, oh, Jesus is loving, and that's true. But sometimes he says things, and you're like, I think that's a burn. I don't know. But either way, despite all of that, Peter's not afraid to ask. And Jesus always gives him an answer. But Peter's still confused. That normalcy part shows through. Like, Peter doesn't always understand everything. And there's a bunch of stories. I only picked a couple, so we're going to do another one. But it's in chapter 14, and it's a story that you might have heard before. It's the story where Jesus walks on water, and we're all like, yeah, Jesus is the walk on water guy. And to just go through it quickly, because it's kind of a long one, but Jesus is going to, like, walk on water, but to back it up, Jesus and his disciples are hanging out somewhere, and they have to go from point A to point B, so they have to cross this, like, body of water, because they're living on the Sea of Galilee, they're walking all up and down that area, and it's easier to take a boat than it is to walk, and so Jesus is like, yeah, you guys go on ahead, I'll catch up. It's like, we only got one boat. He's like, go on ahead, I'll catch up. Are you sure? Okay. So they go, and I think that's, like, the biggest troll in the world, because Jesus is like, I'm going to walk on water, it's totally going to freak them out. Like, I don't know any other way to read that. Like, you're going to go walk on water? Like, I think it's a prank, honestly. That's how I look at that. But Jesus does it. He sends them ahead. He waits a while, like a couple hours. It's like dark. There's a storm. And Jesus is like, this is the perfect time. And so he walks out on the water. And as he's walking, they see him at a distance. They're like, it's a ghost. They start to, because fishermen are like always superstitious. This is the thing about fishermen. So they look at Jesus like, I think that's a ghost. That's definitely a ghost. We need to figure this out. Because if the ghost is showing up, it's a bad time. And there's a storm, so it's an even worse time. And so Jesus is like, nah, it's just me. Don't worry about it. He says, don't be afraid. Take courage. I am here. And they're like, you're walking on water. That's freaky, man. But Peter, being Peter, he's like, all right, I'll test the ghost. I got to see who this is. And Peter goes, hey, Jesus, if it's really you, Lord, if it's really you, let me come to you by walking on the water. Which, first off, why would you want to do that? You're going to be like, I'll walk on some water. You're just what are you talking about? Like, I don't know if Peter was thinking about it, and he's like, I totally got this, but I was like, that's a lot of confidence. Where is that confidence with the ghost? You're more confident about walking on water than you are about the guy that, like, I don't know, I won't get bogged down, but I thought about that for a long time too. And second, it's also kind of cool that that's his reference for Jesus, though, where he's like, I know that's Jesus because he asked me to do hard things. I think that that's kind of cool because, like, sometimes we're like, well, if it's super easy, if I got peace about it, whatever, then I'll know it's God. But, like, I don't think I'd have peace about walking on water, even if I was about to do it. I think you'd really need to hype me up before I would try that. But that's Peter's reference. He's like, yeah, Jesus is the guy who asked me to do really, really hard stuff. And if this ghost wouldn't think I'd be that dumb, right? If it's the ghost is going to be like, yeah, walk on the water. Because I'll be like, no, now I know you're a ghost because you want to, like, you want to get me. But Peter's reference is completely different. He's like, Jesus is the guy who asked me to do really tough things. So that's what he asked. He's like, well, you tell me to come out there. And Jesus is like, yeah, sure, come on out. And Peter goes, and Peter gets to actually walk on water for, like, just a little bit. And he realizes he's walking on water, and he sees, like, the storm and the waves and all those things, and he gets a little freaked out, and he starts to sink, and he has to call out for Jesus to help him. And Jesus does. It's kind of a fun moment because it's not like Jesus, like, ran over. It's like the verses in the Bible, it's like Peter calls for help, and Jesus is just right over there, like, yeah, okay. Like, he just teleports to him. Like, he doesn't even walk. He's like, yeah, what do you want? Like, he just moves there. And there's this moment again where, like, is Jesus being sassy or not? I'm not sure. But in Matthew 14, verses 31, Jesus looks at Peter and he's like, you have so little faith. Why do you doubt me? And it's like, that could be really sassy, right? Where it's like, oh man, Jesus just said I don't have a lot of faith. That kind of hurts. But then when he says, like, why do you doubt me? Like, that could be a very just like, what's going on, buddy? Like, that could be, I think, a caring statement in the right context, but the Bible doesn't give us a dialogue tag. It's not like Jesus said angrily, like, I don't know. It doesn't do that. It doesn't do that. So, like, we don't get to know. But Peter is, that Peter, that guy who, like, has Jesus come and critique his faith, is still the guy who writes the letter to, like, all of Turkey. It doesn't matter. Jesus doesn't disqualify him. He's like, oh, you failed the test. You sank in the water. See you later. I'm just going to leave you here. Like, it doesn't, he still gets to write the letter to Turkey. He writes two of them. And so Peter, for all his faults, still is like in the mix, right? And the one thing that he understands beyond anything else is that Peter knows like exactly who Jesus is, which is kind of a wild thing because not everybody did. Jesus was kind of coy about it. He didn't tell everybody all the time. And so if we jump ahead to Matthew chapter 16, Jesus is having a conversation with his disciples. And the closer he gets to his crucifixion, the more he does this, where he just is telling them all sorts of different things, and he's just like kind of getting them ready. And this is one of those conversations. But he looks at them in verse 13. It was Matthew 16, verse 13. He says, who do people say the Son of Man is? And he's talking about, like, himself, really. And they have this list. It's like they have this quiz, like, oh, we're ready. We know all the options. Like, they list all these, like, biblical figures that they think he might be. They're like, well, you could be John the Baptist or Elijah or Jeremiah or one of the other prophets. Like, all these ideas about, like, who the Messiah was supposed to be. And then in verse 15, Jesus asks him directly. He's like, well, who do you think I am? And Peter, the doubting dumb dude who's always putting his foot in his mouth by making mistakes, says, you, he's meaning Jesus, are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. So he doubts a lot, like he gets into some scrapes, but he still knew who Jesus was. And Jesus acknowledges it, and he says in verse 16 and 17, you are blessed, Simon, son of John, because my Father in heaven has revealed this to you. So even with all of his doubts, Peter still receives a revelation from God about who Jesus is, which means that even his doubts didn't let God decide to take that away. And Jesus continues that, and he says, hey, verses 16 and 18, now I say to you that you are Peter, which means rock, and upon this rock I will build my church, and all the powers of hell will not conquer it. So he still picks Peter to build his church on the back of, despite the fact that Peter is this guy who doesn't always stand stuff, or like doesn't always understand everything, and he doubts like a lot. I only gave you a couple of stories. There's more. And like Peter's not even an unmoving bastion of like belief or theological brilliance. Like that doesn't shine through in his life when you read about it. You can't ask that many questions and be like theologically brilliant or whatever, because then he would just know the answers all the time. He asks a lot of questions. And even though he's really impacted by his culture and he's really impacted by his lack of education and he doesn't always get it, Jesus still picks him to be the guy to build the church. And that means there's really nothing special about Jesus, about Peter. There's nothing special about Peter. Like, there's not something hidden quality that made him perfect for that. Like, he kind of makes, like, all the mistakes that we think we're not supposed to make. Like, well, we're not supposed to doubt. Doubting's bad. I feel like we can get guilty and awkward about all of the doubt, or like, well, we're not supposed to screw up, and it's like, well, I mean, yeah, screwing up isn't great. Like, it's not fun to make mistakes, but it's not the end of the world all the time either. It wasn't for Peter. Peter still gets to, like, have the moment. All Peter does is, like, understand that if you let God have his way, really incredible things can happen. And anyone can do that. And so then the last thing that we can learn from Peter is that he does fail, sometimes spectacularly, but he still finds forgiveness. And there's a couple of stories that stick out, but one of the ones I picked with is like a specific failure of Peter. And I do want to think about it that way. It can be kind of weird, right? Where you're like, Bible characters can't fail. They're Bible characters. It's like, they're people. They make a lot of mistakes. And this, like, Peter just is in that space just as well. And that's kind of one of the points of this, is to understand that this guy who wrote this letter to all of Turkey is pretty regular and kind of normal and is not perfect, just like the rest of us. All right, he's not all that removed from us. So it's at the end of Jesus' life, right before Jesus is going to be tried and sentenced to death and then crucified, right? And at that moment when that happens, like, all of his followers scatter because, like, their leader's being killed by the government. And so they kind of freak out a little bit, which kind of makes sense. But Jesus is like predicts his own death a bunch ahead of time, and he lets them all know what's going to happen. And in Matthew chapter 26, Jesus again predicts his deaths, and he predicts that they're going to scatter. And so in verses 31 and 32, it says, "Tonight, all of you will desert me. But after I have been raised from the dead, I will go ahead of you to Galilee and meet you there." And so that's like a heavy thing. So like, if you're sitting there at the dinner table, whatever, you're all hanging out and your best friend's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna die and you're all gonna leave me." Awkward. And Peter kind of puts his foot in his mouth, and Peter goes, I tell you, and he's like, "I'll never desert you. Like, I won't do it." Which is really bold to have the guy that, because Peter knows that Jesus is like the Son of God. And Peter's seen Jesus work all these miracles, and Peter knows all those things. Peter walked on water, and Peter's like, "Yeah, you're wrong, actually." That's bold. And he still has, like, the gall to say it. And Jesus looks at him in verse 34, and he says, "I tell you the truth, Peter, this very night before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times that you even know me." That's a pretty serious way to put your foot in your mouth, if you tell the guy you believe is God that, like, he's wrong. And then it's going to be really awkward when it turns out that he wasn't wrong. And Peter does, in fact, deny him three times. There's another earlier example of the same thing. And it's in that earlier story we read, where, like, right after Peter declares that Jesus is the Messiah. So he just did something really cool, right? He's like, "Yeah, you're the Messiah. I know this about you." And then it's one of the times when Jesus is predicting his death, and it really bothers Peter. Like, Peter was not cool with the idea that Jesus was going to die. He didn't get that part of the plan. And he says to Jesus, that boldness comes out again. He puts his foot in his mouth again. He's like, "Heaven forbid, Lord, that this will never happen to you." Which, again, that's super bold. And Jesus turns to him and says, "Get away from me, Satan," which is like, oh no. Like, he's just admitted that Jesus is God, and then Jesus looks at him and is like, "Yeah, if I'm God, you're Satan right now." That's a pretty serious critique. It says, Jesus continues, "You are a dangerous trap to me. You are seeing things merely from a human point of view and not from God's." Peter has a pattern of behavior. Puts his foot in his mouth a lot. And he gets rebuked by Jesus a lot. Because you would think when Jesus tells him, "Hey, you're going to deny me three times," it might have made more sense for Peter to be like, "Yeah, okay, but why am I going to do that?" Like, he could have asked the question. He could have been like, instead of saying, "No, I would never," he could have been like, "Oh, really? Why?" But he doesn't even do that. He just denies it. He pushes it away. He doesn't want to grapple with the reality. So he just decides to call Jesus a liar instead. So I think we all have a habit of doing that sometimes. Rather than accepting what Jesus is saying, we're like, "What if you were wrong, though?" And we hold on to that for as long as we possibly can. And Peter holds on to that up until he has those moments where he denies Jesus three times, where he watches Jesus get crucified. He's like, "Oh, everything that guy said was right." So Peter knows that Jesus is the Messiah. He knows all of these things, and he still doubts, and he still even has the guts to contradict. Sounds pretty human to me. Sounds pretty relatable to me. And I think it's because, like, sometimes we can be like, well, if I saw Jesus, if I could hear Jesus, if I watched him do a miracle, and we have this list of things where, like, if I could have just been there, then I'd believe it. It wouldn't even be hard. It's like, well, the guys who were there and who saw it had trouble believing it, and they were there. So that's not really how that works. And if on the flip side, you're thinking about it, and you're like just one of those people who feels really confident all the time, you're like, how could Peter ever doubt? Like, what? You got to see it, man. What's wrong with you? I would suggest that maybe there's something about yourself that you just don't know. Like, if your faith is that easy, that you're never doubting, maybe what you believe is really watered down, and that's why it's so easy. Because Peter knows it's not supposed to be easy. Jesus is the guy who asks him to do impossible things. It's not supposed to be, like, a breeze, necessarily. Right? Like, that doubt doesn't make you, like, stop believing in God anymore. Like, the doubt won't make you go, ooh, maybe he doesn't exist. The doubt will take root and grow because you start believing that something else is more important. Something else begins to overshadow your view and image of what God is. It gets too big, and then all you can see is that thing, and God's lost behind it somewhere. And normally we put those things in front of ourselves all the time. But what's still really incredible is that Jesus knew all of those things about Peter, every single last one of them, and he doesn't care. He picks Peter anyway. Like, Peter couldn't even make good on his promise not to deny Jesus, and Jesus still made good on his promise to build the church on Peter's back. Jesus didn't mind. Jesus was aware. Jesus did it anyway. And part of that is because, like, despite all that doubt, despite all those mistakes, Peter always goes back to that fundamental belief that he knew who Jesus was, and no matter how many mistakes he makes, Peter always turns back and goes, but I know this is still true. And he knew that Jesus would forgive him. It's not really necessarily like a second thought for Peter. Peter knows because he messes up a lot and he consistently receives grace. And so for Peter, the pattern for him is the knowledge that every time he messed up, Jesus never really minded all that much. Like, Jesus was going to correct him. Jesus wanted to see that change. Jesus wanted to see the fundamental belief, right, shift. But he never disqualifies Peter, not once. And Peter knew that. It's to wrap it up a bit at the end, just to see that on display, like to see how Peter knew, like what Peter's reaction was. It's the story in John chapter 21, which is the last chapter in John. It's from verses 1 through 7. I'm gonna run through that a little bit quickly. But it's after Jesus has been crucified. He's already reappeared to his followers a couple of times. And this is the third time that he does it. And it's a really cool way to bookend it, even though it's in a different gospel. Like, for Peter and Jesus, it starts on the Sea of Galilee. And we're going to find out in John chapter 21, verses 1 through 7, it ends, to a certain extent, on the Sea of Galilee, which I just thought was really cool. And so Peter's back to being a fisherman. Because what else is he going to do? He goes back to what he knows. Even though Jesus has reappeared, we're not yet at the book of Acts, so he's not yet growing the church. He's still sort of sitting with what's happened, right? Jesus has been crucified. Jesus has risen from the dead. But Peter is back to fishing, and some of Jesus' other followers are there with him. And Jesus appears on the shore and, like, calls out to them and talks to them across the water. And Peter doesn't even recognize him. It's another one of Jesus' followers who's there who's like, hey, I think that's Jesus. And Peter's like, oh, my gosh, you're right. And the moment he realizes, he just, like, grabs his cloak, he jumps in the water, so he, like, throws his clothes on, jumps in the water, and, like, swims to shore to talk to Jesus. Doesn't even think about it, right? Doesn't even hesitate. He's not even worried that Jesus won't want to see him. He goes straight to him. And it says in verse 9, and I love this detail, it says, when they got there, being the other disciples, when they arrive, they found breakfast waiting for them. Which is, like, that's a fun detail to get lost in. Jesus goes to visit them, right? And instead of just being like, I have a very serious thing to talk to you about, Jesus is like, I made you guys breakfast. Which is not necessarily the image of Jesus we have all the time. Like, I just don't think we see him as being like, look, I made you food. We're going to sit and talk and, like, eat together. And what that shows us about Peter is that he always did everything he could to learn from every mistake he ever made. And that also Jesus gave him the space to make sure he could learn from every mistake he ever made. And Peter accepts that correction and then uses it to grow. And Peter, because of that, gives Jesus then the space to make good on every promise that Jesus ever made. Right? He told Peter at the very beginning, I will show you how to be fishers of men. And then for the rest of Peter's life, Jesus showed him how to do it. All of that will culminate in the book of Acts in the second chapter, where Peter gets to preach to a crowd for the first time, and a couple thousand people come to a saving faith in Jesus. A couple thousand. That's the fisherman dude who was confused all the time. Preaches to a group of thousands of people, and they all come to know Jesus. Right? That's the guy who didn't always get it. That's the guy who was confused all the time. That's the guy who denied Jesus three times. He's also the guy who cut off an ear. I didn't tell that story, but he cuts off a guy's ear at some point. Same dude. Gets to preach to thousands of people and change their lives forever in the exact same way that his life was changed forever. All Peter does is trust in what he knew. Jesus was forgiving and full of grace. And that allows Peter to step into a purpose that helps him change the lives of all these people. And so what that tells us too is that if you step into the purpose, you probably won't be perfect at it. Like almost 10 years of doing youth ministry, I have not been perfect at it. But at the same time, even though I'll like, just as Peter failed and I've failed, you might also fail and you might also make mistakes and you might also not understand everything all of the time. Jesus is still going to use all of that. And so just like Peter, who's that confused fisherman guy who was too scared to admit when it mattered that he knew Jesus, Jesus still used it. He used every single normal part of Peter, every single last little like mundane, regular bit, and said, it's okay that you didn't just get it. It's okay if we don't always get it. Jesus will use you even if you failed, and he will forgive you when you fail. Peter knew it, and he always trusted it, and it was always true. So if you guys could bow your heads and close your eyes as we bring this thing to a close. If you're a Christian sitting here and you're thinking, I just don't know how God could ever use me. I don't know how God could ever let me back in after making all of the mistakes that I've made, or you just really want to know, like, how is that possible? Because you can't see it. What I want to let you know is that what the Apostle Paul wrote in the book of Romans, chapter 8, is true, where Paul writes, can anything ever separate you from Christ's love? No. Despite all those things, right? Despite all the mistakes, despite how far away you may have walked from God, despite all of the overwhelming, like, feelings of fear that you have, Paul writes, no, despite all of these feelings, overwhelming victory is ours through Christ who loved us. And so if you're a Christian in the room, it's important to remember that God is waiting for you. God did not disqualify Peter from coming back, and God won't disqualify you from coming back. So no matter what promises to God you've broken, no matter how far away you've walked, if you take that moment to let God know you want to turn things around, take that moment right now and just ask God what your next step needs to be, because he wants nothing more for you to come back home. And if you're not a Christian in the room, I want you to know that God is always ready to welcome you. That you might not feel ready, and you might feel really small, or you just might feel really angry, or you might feel like God doesn't care, and you're just not sure how you could ever have a purpose worth your while. But I want you to know that no matter what has happened in your life, no matter how many times you have cursed God, badmouthed God, or simply run away from God, there's still time for you to change your mind. And that if you've been hiding, there's still time to come out and say, God, I've been running a long time, and I've made a lot of mistakes. And I don't always understand, but I want to, and I want to know you. And if you look at God and you say, God, if, since you want me, I'm all in, God will be ready to take you and to run with you to some crazy, crazy new places. Heavenly Father, I just want to thank you for bringing everybody here. I want to thank you for the opportunity. I ask, Lord, that as we go out and we celebrate, that we could sit with these things and know that no matter where we've been, all that you want is for us to come back home. Lord, I pray all these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.